We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. This podcast that you're about to listen to is a patron teaser podcast. Myself and Norman Riley would do this State of Play podcast at least once per month about everything that's going on at Newcastle United. If you enjoy what you hear today, come and join us on Patreon. $6.60 a month. It keeps this podcast free of charge, and you get 30 to 40 extra of these every single month about Newcastle United. Hope you enjoy the show. It's the State of Play podcast from True Faith. Alex Hurst and Norman Riley here to talk to you about what's been going on at Newcastle United and maybe explore a little bit about why it's been happening and what might happen next. Norman, we're having this chat. It is the international break. Newcastle have lost their last two games. And one of the things I'm really keen to get your thoughts on, do those two defeats tell you anything at all about the limit or the ceiling of this team? And I'll expand on the question a little bit. Newcastle currently reside in 14th place, I believe. There's some discussion with players to come back that Newcastle could be in the mix for a top 10. Teams like Brighton have come back into view. Teams like Southampton were recently beat. There's some discussion of a run into the top 10. We'll have five of our last eight fixtures at home. Do these two defeats kind of suggest that actually Howe's done a brilliant job just to get to clear the relegation zone, and anything above that was always going to be a massive bonus? This team are probably a bottom six side. What are your thoughts, mate?
The bottom six side, I think that's probably a bit harsh. I think they're a side who can finish anywhere between 10th and 17th. So not necessarily a bottom six in that sense, right? I think I would discount them as a bottom three side. That's for sure. And you have to look at the teams that are really in between those positions, right? I mean, look, Leicester, given their kind of recent upturn in form, are probably going to finish 10th place, right? They're probably going to finish top 10. So you can see that the top 10's almost signed, sealed and delivered, right? But ultimately, I think we're certainly in that group between 11th and 17th. So what's that? That's seven teams. And I think that those sides are more or less interchangeable. And I think that the position we're in at the moment, 14th, if we finished in that position, that would be reflective of the ability of the squad. If we finished 11th, that would be equally reflective. If we finished 17th, that would be equally reflective. I think finishing anywhere above that inside the top 10 probably is something that it could almost be a false economy, because I think, you know, we finished in the top 10 of the squad as it is at the moment, and you think, well, maybe it just needs a couple of cosmetic changes pre-season, because we've got the fundamentals of a very competitive squad. Yeah, I don't think that. I think finishing in the top 10 would be a case of, you know, you look at last season under Bruce, when we went on that unbeaten run towards the end of the season that lifted us up to 12th place or whatever it was. That was more based on, I think, a lot of the teams that we played not having anything to play for. So we got a bit of the rub of the green. And I think if we finished top 10 this season, bearing in mind where we're on the table now, bearing in mind the teams above us, it would be more of an indication of where the teams were playing or at. Like, they literally don't have anything to play for. So we're picking up points that, you know, maybe if these teams would play them 2 months earlier or in September, that they may well have beat us. So I think, yeah, we're not a bottom six squad, but we're certainly in may, not by any stretch of the imagination, a top 10 squad. So these last two defeats, if you want me to move on to them, the last two defeats. Look, the Everton game, absolutely devastating. But that's because Everton are basically losing to Everton is how I'd imagine a lot of other teams' fans felt when Newcastle under Steve Bruce beat them. You're losing to an utterly clueless, shocking team who seems to get a disproportionate amount of luck for a match. That's basically what what Everton got lucky. You could argue the sending off was unlucky. It wasn't. It was a clear sending off. But that game itself, we could well have been 2-0 at half time. I thought actually we could have had 4 goals. And Chelsea, we ever lose that? We lose in the last minute to a team that has won the Champions League and is the World Club Champions. I mean, you know, there's no real panic in my mind about that. And again, further context, losing 2 consecutive games in the Premier League when you're a side that's spent most of the season in the bottom 5 isn't. It's not hugely, you know, hugely devastating. It's not a huge surprise we lost 2 games off the spin. Just I think the Everton game is the one that's really put people's noses out of joint just because Everton are a terrible, terrible side. And I think ultimately, just finishing off, what both games have shown me is that we are so incredibly desperate for a centre forward. I don't want to criticise Chris Wood, so I'm not going to. I think he's been brought into a specific job, and during that unbeaten run, he's done that job well. However, certain games, that clinical centre forward, that mobile centre forward is necessary. Everton, on Thursday night of last week, if fully fit Callum Wilson had been our side in that game, I think we would have won that game. If we'd had a better centre forward than Chris Wood in the team, I think we would have won that game. So it's just highlighted where the weaknesses are, and it's not a massive shock, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, the fact that the defeats came quite close together, the fact that they were both live on television, so everyone can watch them in the UK anyway, has probably led to a little bit more disappointment. I just think that, you know, those sides above us, and, you know, there's lots of people listening to this, and I get it, who think, I don't care how we finish, we just had to stay up. So this isn't me or Norman or anyone at True Faith, I don't think, saying, oh, we should finish here. I agree that finishing 17th, if Newcastle finish 17th this season, it will still be seen as a positive season. Don't want to finish 17th. I want to finish as high as possible. You want to get as much Premier League prize money in as possible. You want to go into next season in as positive a mindset as possible. You know, having said that, you know, Newcastle, above them in the league, they've got Brighton, who were beat. And I'm going to come on to the performances a little bit more later, but then we've got Palace, who will play soon. But Palace have won the same amount of games this season as Newcastle have. You've got Southampton, who took 4 points off this season and were beat fairly comfortably at their place down there. And like you say, Leicester, mate, are probably 2 games in hand as well, picking up some form. They are probably out of reach. You've got Villa and Wolves. You know, the next game against Villa will be really interesting to me. Villa aren't going to have Jimenez up front. There's a chance Neves will be injured, just to try and even out some of the injury stakes that we suffer each game without our best players. So, and then in 7th place, West Ham, who Newcastle, you know, West Ham, I think, have won possibly every home game since Newcastle went there, and were probably the better side in the 1-1 draw. So I'm interested anyway, and that's why I thought it was worth having this conversation about just what the ceiling of this side is. Craig Hope said on the pod recently with Cyan Emile that the performance at Chelsea was almost the victory, because, you know, how many times have you seen Newcastle, you know, for example, go to Spurs away last season, be a disgrace and get a point? Well, actually, you know, what would you rather be? Would you rather be capable of winning the game? Newcastle should have won the game at Chelsea because of the refereeing decisions. So, you know, the Everton game, like you said, was frustrating. I think the Everton game, you get games where you deserve to win and you don't. And like you said, many, many teams have come up against Newcastle under Steve Bruce and had that feeling. Under Bruce, very rarely did we not get what we deserve, if that makes sense. Like, if we played remotely well, would get a point or would win, which people would call luck. I think the Everton game reminded me, mate, I don't know if you what your views are on this, and maybe we could develop the conversation into leadership, but also know-how in the team, and to bring it back to where I think the team possibly are. Our lads, I don't think, have just been in the kind of position where they are expected to dominate a game in its entirety. Now, you could look back at Brentford, and that would be a caveat, because we did do that at Brentford. Probably didn't dominate the second half, and Howe was a little bit critical about our performance second half and not going on to kill the game. But I bring the Everton game back, and I think at Everton at 0-0, 10-11, and I kind of think of that Watford game at home, when Newcastle are 1-0 up against a team that had lost 9 of the last 10 with a manager who was about to be sacked, and everything was laid out for Newcastle to go dominate the game and put it to bed. And we discussed in the podcast after that about how there was almost just because of the history of a lot of these players in this team, they just haven't been in this position very often where it's expected. And if you look at Newcastle's position at 0-0 there, 10-11, St Maximin comes on, and just like against Chelsea, and that there is a pod coming on Patreon this week about ASM in particular, I don't think Newcastle's game plan from the players on the pitch changed whatsoever. 10v11. That can only come from experience and leadership. And I've heard it said before, I don't know if it was on one of our pods or on social media, if Kieran Trippier plays in that game, Newcastle probably win. Not even through anything that he does, although he is a very good player, and much better than Emil Kraft, but just from like him playing, having played for Atletico Madrid, probably been in that situation loads of times, having played for Spurs, having played for England in those situations, it's like we have to change what we're doing. Now, just like when we went 1-0 up against Watford in that home game, we now have to change what we do to put pressure on the opposition, because it's now the opposition who are under pressure, and we just seemed, yeah, whether it's inexperience, whether it's lack of kind of game management, whether it's both, I don't know, mate. What do you make of that? And I suppose I think that's probably, forget about the result for a second, that's probably the thing that will concern Howe the most, alongside the second half performance, is that a couple of occasions, Brentford aside, when we've been given clear opportunities to turn the screw on opponents, we just don't seem to be able to do it.
That's a very interesting point, because obviously this is a squad of players, and look, I know there are people who've joined over the course of a number of years, but a lot of them have been there for, what, 4 years, maybe? 4 years, you know? You look at that team the other night, you've got Dubravka in there, Fabian Shea. I know Shelby wasn't playing, but he's part of the squad. ASM, I think, is on his, what, he's on his third season with the club. Yeah. And, you know, this is a squad who are basically a backs-to-the-wall squad, right? That's what they've been. You know, the only time that Jonjo Shelvey in his whole, was it seven seasons at Newcastle United now, I think? The only time he's been in a position of starting a game and the overwhelming amount of games in a team that's favourite to win was in the Championship.
Yeah.
Every single season outside of that, he has been in a side that has been battling relegation and has gone into the bulk of games that it's played as the underdog, right? As the team that's expected to cede possession, as the team that's expected to soak up pressure and get, you know, get a counter attack and maybe pick up the odd good result, which is kind of the pattern, right? That's kind of what's happened. So that's an interesting point, because obviously we go to Everton and the roles are reversed, right? Everton are basically Newcastle United under Steve McLaren. Everton are basically Newcastle United under Steve Bruce. Newcastle United under John Cover. Newcastle United like ad infinitum under Mike Ashley apart from one season, more or less. So we go there. And I think as well as fans, we fully expected to win it. It's a rare occurrence as a Newcastle fan over the last, other than the Championship season, as I say, the last 10, 11 seasons, where I've been that convinced we're going to win a game. I've gone into games thinking we're going to win, but it's always kind of balanced with it's Newcastle, maybe. We're not that brilliant of a side. This game, I fully expected us to win. This, for me, was an absolute banger. And that, as you say, it just goes to show that, no, these players do have a collective mindset that is used to being the underdog. So it's that kind of transition that is going to take time, and I think that only comes, as you say, with experience, i.e. Trippier. Again, I'm convinced if Callum Wilson starts that game, we win. But I think Callum Wilson's on the kind of next level with his confidence and the experience. I think he's the kind of player who goes out on the pitch and thinks, I'm going to win every game because I'm that good, right? But I think this squad, as good as it is, you do look at it and think, well, actually, we need to bring winners in. That sounds horrible. I'm not saying that these players are losers by any stretch of imagination, but I'm talking about players who are coming in whose mindset is, we go out in every game, and I go out in every game and I fully expect to win. I'm going to say Bruno's probably that playing at Lyon, playing for the Brazilian national side. But a lot of those players were brought in to do a specific job at Newcastle, and that job was to survive. So that mindset is, we go on the pitch, we get a result, we survive. We need. I think it's clear we need to bring in two or three, you know, as I say, absolute winners.
I totally agree. And while losers might be an unfair word, we have said before, I've said before at least, that
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
When the reason for existence is staying up year after year after year, there is going to be a drop off. Now, there might not have been a drop off because the Chelsea performance didn't suggest a drop off. The Everton performance, there was a drop off. The first half, Newcastle were good. We played some nice stuff. Actually, watching the highlights back, they get into some better positions than I realised, and it's just the end product and some bad luck and some good luck for Everton. Stop Newcastle taking the lead and winning the game. But that's why the rest of the season's so interesting, because there is a sense of, particularly with the way that the club want to go, with owners of the club talking about Premier League titles and Champions League football in years to come, I think it'll be really handy for Howe to see who's up for the challenge of trying to get as many points as possible. Because I think Newcastle can beat anyone at home. Five home games against, I think the lowest placed team is 10th, Leicester. Or Palace, sorry. So Palace as well. I forgot about them because they were moved. And then away games at Norwich, Spurs, and Burnley. So two of those away games. Man City as well, sorry. But two of those away games, and Palace at home, and Leicester at home, and Wolves at home. You know, Newcastle win any of those fixtures, all of those fixtures, and I don't think anyone's surprised. Arsenal and Liverpool are probably a different conversation, and Spurs and City are a different conversation. So I think Howe's going to learn a lot. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up about the Everton performance and the mentality of it, and the fact that on the pitch, you know, I thought Newcastle should have squeezed higher up the pitch. I thought Everton at no point 10v11 were kind of pendant to their own box. Newcastle should have got another couple of players in the penalty area. You know, it's a tough one, and it's not for today, but there is probably a conversation about Newcastle's midfield three to be had for the next fixture, mm-hmm. assuming Jonjo Shelby comes back. You know, you guys talked about it on the free podcast that you did after the game. I've been saying it for years. You miss Jonjo when he's not there. You don't realise how good he is until he's not there. And he hasn't been great the whole time he's been here, but he's always been better, pretty much apart from maybe Modiyame and Ki Sun Young for a bit. Chelvey's always been better than what's replaced him, even if he hasn't been good himself. So that was interesting for the last couple of fixtures that we've really, really missed him. And to bring it back to the teams above, get your thoughts on this, mate. So Newcastle beat Brighton. Newcastle beat Southampton, and Eddie Howe, after both of those fixtures, was very pleased with the results, crucial results, to give us this 9-point gap to the relegation zone that we've got now, but was kind of critical of his side, particularly in the second half, not controlling the game, kind of going back to having 30-odd% possession. And when you're ahead in the match, it doesn't need to be like that against those sides. What do you think? I put it this way. Are we better than Brighton or Southampton, or did we just do what we had to do? Did we just manage to do what we had to do on the day against them to get the results? I mean, you were at the Southampton game, didn't think about the Brighton game, but I'm asking this question because I'm trying to kind of realise where this side are right now and where they want to be at the start of next season. My view, mate, is that Eddie Howe looks at those performances and he's a bit worried, and it's kind of those worries have spilled into the performance against Everton, that at the minute, for whatever reason, we're unable to control games. What do you think, mate, with those results in particular?
Great question. Do I think we're better than Brighton or Southampton? I think we're Southampton. I don't think there's much difference between the two squads. I think what you might have at Southampton is a very settled squad and ethos, because Hasenhüttl's been there for a long time. He's got a very distinct way of playing. Those players know how to play it. He brings through young players. They've also got, they've got like a kind of fulcrum, James Ward-Prowse, right? It's, you know, he is the fulcrum in that side, and kind of almost everything goes through him. And we haven't had that at Newcastle. We've got some very talented individuals. Maximin, injury prone, players out in the wing. Callum Wilson, brilliant, injury prone. John Joe Shelby, you mentioned there, is a very good player. We miss him when he's gone, but he's not in the same league as James Ward-Prowse, in my opinion, right? So for a start, they've got that fulcrum. And then you look at the forwards and you think, well, actually, we've got Callum Wilson and Chris Wood. Now, Callum Wilson out of, you know, him, Wood, Adams and Broha, probably the best player, right? Broha, you could argue, may go on and have a better career than Callum Wilson, because he looks fantastic. Ultimately, though, would Chi Adams or Broha get in ahead of Chris Wood in your team? I believe that they would, right? I do believe that. So, but then again, we've got players in other positions who are better than theirs, right? I think, you know, I think someone like Joe Linton, you could argue, would be equally as effective, if not more, than Romeo, etc. So I think that there isn't that much difference, other than the fact that they've got that fulcrum and Ward-Prowse, and they've got a very settled style of player, and they've got a manager who's been there for years. Brighton, on the other hand, I think Brighton have got better players, and arguably, right now, they've got a better manager than Graham Potter. That's not me disparaging Howe by any stretch of the imagination. However, Howe, in his last season in the Premier League prior to Newcastle, did get relegated with Bournemouth. A very tough job. He kept them up for 5 seasons, which is a miracle in itself. But he had 18 months out of the game. Potter's been in the Premier League for 4 years. So Howe's kind of, I suppose, at the minute, rediscovering himself as a Premier League manager in many respects, right? Whereas Potter's been there for a bit longer. And right now, I think you could make the argument that Potter's maybe a better manager. I think Howe may well usurp him. In fact, I do think he'll usurp him. But right now, as I say, you've got that. You've also got Brighton again, an identity, again, an established 3 or 4 seasons of playing the same way, a settled squad, and also in the team, they've got those fulcrums, right? They've got Lewis Dunk at the back. They've got Bissouma in midfield. They've got some exciting youngsters coming through. So I think right now, Brighton are better. And I think overall, their squad's better. But there's not that much of a difference, right? There's not much of a difference. So I think with Newcastle, it's really just a case of we're getting those couple of players in that are going to be solid in the team for years and getting that identity. You think about it like this, mate. We had absolute litany of terrible managers prior to Rafa. Rafa comes in and it's basically just firefighting from day one, right? It's firefighting from day one. It's minimal possession. It's getting results that we can. And then Steve Bruce comes in, and Steve Bruce, you know, Frank Lampard made five formation changes in the game against Crystal Palace on Sunday. They got beat 4-0. That's exactly the kind of thing that Bruce does. It's just throw it at it. Well, I've done everything I can. It's the players now. We've had that for years. So Howe has had 4 months or 5 months to not only try and implant some sort of identity, we're seeing it with the 4-3-3, but also to get the players out of the mindset of just having absolute confusion and nothing other than survival of the minds for years and years. So, yeah, that's a long-winded answer, mate. But ultimately, I don't think Southampton and Brighton are that much better. They're just more settled, and they've got a little bit more of an identity than we have right now.
Great answer. I can't really disagree with any of that, so I won't. I think the reason I ask is I'm just trying to work out both where we are now and looking ahead to next season, because I do think that we're safe. Where we'll be and who we'll be competing with. And it's a surprise for me to see, you know, Villa as high as ninth, because we beat Villa at home. But then, you know, against Villa, we had one shot which went in, which was great. Against Brighton, we kind of had two chances and we scored them both. Against Southampton, kind of had two chances and scored, and we've been very, very clinical. Now, in those games, I'm not trying to belittle what we've done, because we defended superbly, and also Martin Dubravka against Brighton hasn't really had to make a save. Martin Dubravka against Villa hasn't really had to make a save. Against Southampton, he has to make saves right at the death. Like, before that, all game he's not had to make a save, and then literally in the injury time, he's had to make two saves. So it just shows that the defensive solidity that Newcastle have now got is probably... indefinitely the reason for this massive upturn in form and collection of points, and that there's still a lot of work to be done as an attacking team, a team that controls possession and can actually manage games. You know, I think Newcastle can manage games quite well. I thought they managed the Everton game at home really well. They managed the Burnley game at home very well. They were managing the Watford game quite well until that all went apart. So there's definitely something there. And I don't think you hear someone like Eddie Howe consistently make reference to this being a problem unless he believes it. It's a massive problem. Mm. It's a form of communication to the players as well publicly, and also to the supporters that, yeah, this is great, but it's not quite what it's supposed to be. And I love that, because how many podcasts did we used to do after Steve Bruce performances, even if we're drawn or won, when you're like, what was that supposed to look like? Because they've had 20 shots, they've hit the post three times, Martin Dubravka's pulled off nine saves, and we've got a 1-1 draw through a penalty in the last minute. What was the plan going into that game, and how has it failed? Whereas Howe was actually communicating, we had a plan for the game, yes, we've won, but it still didn't go to plan, and it's still supposed to be much better than that. And I suppose that fits in with the ethos of the club. You're right to bring in the Bournemouth, you know, relegation, because perhaps Bournemouth fans would be saying, well, what's our plan in that season? And, you know, how was Bournemouth were known for a long time as a counter-attacking side? And then he tried to make them into a more possession-based side, and it went very badly. So that might not be on him, might not have the players, the conditions, all that kind of stuff. But it is interesting to me that those sides in particular, you know, Villa, Southampton and Brighton, were able to dominate us in midfield and dominate possession as much as they did when we're clearly trying to not do that. And then Everton are the other side, where we were clear, we just didn't do it. We just, you know, we let Everton back into the game, and you're completely correct in your analysis that Everton just kind of just turned up. That's it. They didn't do anything in particular. They didn't target any parts of our pitch. They didn't exploit any weaknesses. They just turned up and stayed in the game and got that one moment through a turnover in midfield, and there was a bit of space, a bit of bad defending, and you've won a game 1-0, and they might stay in the Premier League as a result of that. Let's move on though, mate. The next thing that I wanted to talk about is the midfield three, actually. I said it was for another podcast. I can see it's in my notes now, actually, to talk about today. Your midfield three, assuming everyone is fit for Southampton, for Wolves, mate.
Man, this is like a really tough decision, because you're looking at four first-choice midfielders, really. You can only select three of them, right? Now, out of those four midfielders, I don't think any of the other three, offer what Joe Willock does, right? And Willock gets a lot of criticism when he, to a certain extent, disappears in games. I don't think that's down to him disappearing. I just think it's down to the fact that he's not getting the balls put in the spaces where he makes his runs, right? I think that's what it is. None of the midfielders have the pace of Willock nor the ability to score. If you look at Shelvey's, Guimaraes and Joe Linton's scoring records, I mean, Joe Linton was a forward, he's become a midfielder, but he's not a goal scorer midfielder, right? It's nothing like Willock. Willock, even at Arsenal, averaged a decent amount of goals in the games he started. You know, he got into double figures for them in less than 70 appearances, I think. So this is a kid who knows where the back of the net is. He knows how to time his runs in the box, and he can finish. We knew he can finish. None of the midfielders do that. So as far as I'm concerned, he is vital in that side, regardless of what people may throw in terms of arguments about him disappearing in games. As I say, Shelvey, I think we've already established, is vital to the side, right? He keeps ticking over. He's the person who can receive the ball deep, spread passes, make himself available. And, you know, ultimately, his movement from the edge of our box to more or less sort of 30 yards out from there, the late sort of 30-yard area, is vital. He's vital. He just turns the ball over, and makes himself available. So the big decision, ultimately, is Guimaraes and Joelinton, isn't it? That's your decision. Now, watching them at Everton together, I thought that Guimaraes was fantastic, right? I thought there was a lot that he did. I thought that this kid is just a naturally gifted footballer. I think what happened, though, was that it was almost like Joe Linton's role in the team was negated, because Guimaraes was basically doing what Joe Linton would normally do. You know, he was making himself available in our half. He was kind of putting blocks in. He was closing down space. And I think the two of them together, oh, God, mate, it's such a tough one. It's controversial to say you want to drop either one of them, right? That's the thing. So, can I be brutally honest with you right now? I wouldn't care which one it was, if Joe Linton or Guimaraes. I think there's an argument that depends on the opponent. You might think, well, actually, Joe Linton gives us a bit more physicality than Guimaraes. Or against another opponent, Guimaraes gives us a bit more in terms of offensive capacity. So right now, mate, I would have to say Willock and Shelvey are shoe-ins, and Guimaraes and Joe Linton. I'm going to leave that one to you, because I just can't, right? And the thing is, as well, Joe Linton's been absolutely sensational. You know that he has. He's been absolutely sensational. But can Guimaraes do what Joe Linton does and offer us more? That's the question I think you have to ask right now, because as I say, I think Shelvey and Willock are pretty much unique and therefore irreplaceable.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, I don't know what listeners are thinking, and it's each to their own, of course, because I think this is just me trying to guess the kind of overall perception of a fan base and, you know, how arrogant to do that. I think you can second guess what other people are thinking. And also a fan base is kind of diverse and geographically spread as ours with a range of opinions. I think a lot of people assume Willock's the one to come out. And that's probably because if he's not scoring, he kind of has that, even though he's playing in a three-man midfield, and I think it's fair to say he does have more license to get forward than the other two. But even so, there aren't many midfielders who are like, oh, your central midfielder didn't score, that's no good. But he is kind of judged like that a little bit. And I think like you see people, you're right, people say that he goes missing. They're probably, especially if you're watched on TV, sometimes, could be wrong, but sometimes probably underappreciate how much work he does off the ball. Because he's just his fitness is absolutely insane and he gets around the pitch brilliantly. You've just put in the notes there, you know, Leeds, he didn't score, should have scored, but he didn't score. But he was absolutely brilliant second half in particular. And when Willock, this just to throw a curveball in, but there's no way that he's part of the conversation. I accept that. When Willock and Longstaff played against Leeds together in that game, Leeds had nowhere to go in midfield. They kept having to go backwards and sideways because they were just at them straight away. And Shelby had a very, very good game using the ball and scoring the goal that day. So that we haven't seen that midfield since. And I don't think we'll see it again because of the other two players in the conversation. But I think a lot of people assume that it's Willock who drops out. I agree with you, though, that I'm much more confident that as long as Willock's playing well to his ability and his potential, I'm more confident Newcastle are going to score in that game with him there. Now, Joe Linton's an interesting one with Guimaraes because I don't think Joe Linton was anywhere near match fit for Everton. He'd missed the previous couple of games. I understand why Howe played him because there's nearly a 3-week gap until the next fixture. I think Longstaff should have started ahead of Joe Linton that game. I think it's something that he got wrong. I think he should have started Mankiw as well. But, you know, Eddie Howe gets most things right and knows much more about everything than me. But I do think he got that one wrong. The thing for me, mate, is assuming all goes well, okay? Let's just say we beat Wolves. Which will be a fantastic Friday night. Let's just say we'll beat Wolves at St James's, and that moves us on to, as I get the Premier League table,
34 points.
That moves us on to 34 points with 7 to play. It's just 34 points is probably enough to keep you up already. I kind of feel the hard work the team have done, you have to use that to your advantage and have a look. Have a look at everyone. You know, it's going to be a massive summer for Newcastle United. Expectation next season, particularly if there's more seismic transfer activity. Expectations is whatever the owners say or the manager says or anything. You know, you did a podcast with Mick Martin for Patrons and Mark Corby about previous beginnings and the excitement and anticipation that builds. Newcastle United next season would be expected for a tilt at that top 8 in a cup. That would be the expectation, in my opinion. So, Bruno Guimaraes, you're kind of going to have to play him, even if it's not the best solution. He needs to start next season with 10 Premier League starts under his belt, rather than him starting next season with 4 or 5, because the three who've done so well, and that's Willock, Shelby, Joe Linton, even if that is the best three for the current situation, I kind of, even as a fan, just think you have to have half an eye on next season. And I think Howe does have half an eye on next season because of the things we're talking about, with him talking about controlling games, losing possession, losing the midfield. Most managers in his position, and he knows that 17th I wouldn't call it a miracle, but it's a huge achievement. It's an achievement that people thought that he wasn't capable of just 2 months ago. So he could be stood there at full time saying, brilliant lads, have done so well, I'm so proud, fantastic, couldn't ask for any more than them. But he hasn't. He stood there and said, I'm disappointed with the way that we've done this in the second half. So I just feel like I just want to have a look. And if Sean Longstaff's going to be given a new contract, hoy him in there. Let's have a look. You know, he's played against Man United and he's played against Leeds. He came on, 20 minutes against Leeds for Joe Linton. And he was brilliant in both of those fixtures. And you know what? I think that's from me. I think that's competition for places. Mm-hmm. I think that's genuine competition for places. So even if you're Joe Willock or even if you're John Joe Shelby, if you don't perform, you've got one of these lads breathing down your neck. And if the team is winning and you're performing, you're not going to get dropped. And that's maybe why we saw Joe Linton, John Joe and Willock perform at the levels that they've been performing at. But I do believe Guimaraes has to start. And I kind of just want Howe to have a look, because you could argue, and again, we'll have to see where we're going in the summer with what positions they want to strengthen, but you could argue that they're possibly looking for another central midfielder. They might not, but if they are, then I feel that, you know, I feel like you've got to have a look at everyone. Over to you.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. The way I think of it is the midfield three of Willock, Shelvey and Joe Linton, as good as it has been this season post-Christmas, it's been fantastic. It's been fantastic, the three of them. There's no two ways about it, right? Is that trio, the trio that Howe is envisaging for next season, is that what he's... Is he thinking... Are him and Jason Tindall sat there thinking, right, well, midfield's done. We're sorted for next season. No bother. We've just got to focus on getting maybe a centre-half and getting a new centre-forward in and getting possibly a new winger. Like, is that what they're thinking? Because I don't think they are. I think Bruno Guimarães has been brought in to start, right? He's been brought in to be a part of a team challenging for the top eight next season. Therefore, you expect him to come in, as you say, next season, right? Is he looking at Shelvey and Willock and Joe Linton and thinking, well, like, it's two from these three now. Bruno's in, it's two from these. I don't think he is. I think, like you, he's probably thinking we're going to bring another centre midfielder in. Therefore, you could argue that maybe out of the three that are have been so good this season, only one of them is actually going to make it into the side next season. So, yes, I totally agree. If we are safe on 34 points after we beat Wolves, which of course we will, then why not just give Bruno a six-game run? Because ultimately, if he's going to be starting in the midfield next season, doesn't really matter who you drop, because one of them is probably going to get, well, one of them, if not two of them, are likely to be either, you know, sold or kept on as squad players next season. And I'd probably say, as good as he's been for it, it might be, it may well be Shelvey who gets moved on, just because he's been at the club for a long time, and he's been at the club for a long time while it's been quite poor. So you ask yourself, as good as Jonjo Shelvey has been for Newcastle, is a 30-year-old Jonjo Shelvey a player who is going to be starting in the first 11 regularly for a side that's supposedly pushing at the top eight? I don't know. I think Shelvey's a very, very good player. I think he's probably wasted a lot of his potential by staying at Newcastle United for as long as he has, but ultimately he may well be the one that shifted on. So in that case, what's your argument? Do we just think, well, we're stayed up now, let's make it feel look more like what it's going to look like next season and give it a trial?
Yeah, spot on. And I'm really pleased you said that about Shelvey, because one of the things that I like about Howe, and all good managers are like this, but one of the things I love about Howe is how ruthless he is. So Howe comes to Newcastle and everyone's like, oh, Matt Ritchie, the reunion. You had a look at Matt Ritchie at left back, didn't even try him further up the pitch and just thought, not for us. You know, not for us. Jamal Lascelles has come in and improved under Howe, and he can't get in the team. And he's club captain. Isaac Hayden is training now. So, you know, yes, he was injured in terms of the 25-man squad and all that kind of stuff, but he would have had, you know, April and May kind of eight fixtures left to play. And he's thought, no, thank you. Jamal Lewis is another one. I thought Jamal Lewis did brilliantly under Howe. And he's thought, now we're going to get Matt Target, thanks very much. And Mankio can cover if we need him to on that side. Plus, we've got Paul Dummett. So I do think Jonjo is at risk. Howe came in and put a lot of capital into Jonjo Shelvey from day one, mentioned by name. Very smart thing to do. Realised that to get this team playing football and scoring goals, they needed Jonjo Shelvey. But there are upgrades out there to Jonjo Shelvey. And the other thing to mention about this discussion about the midfield three, formation. There's, you know, Howe is not married to 4-3-3 throughout his career. He's played 4-4-2. He's played 4-4-1-1, 4-2-3-1. He's played five at the back. 5-2-3. So, you know, there isn't necessarily anything there to say that it's definitely going to be 3-from-3 next season. I think, again, it's early to call it. I think he does like the formation, and it seems to fit the players that we have in the squad. I think as well, just to give a shout for Joe Linton and Willock, and Jonjo maybe being the one to miss out, is this midfield relies on the kind of ability to cover lots of ground. And Willock and Joe Linton just do that for fun. They're almost perfect for what Howe wants in terms of being able to cover the ground. Sure, Longstaff does that as well, very well. So you kind of, I agree with you that right now what we see, it probably is a toss-up between the two Brazilians. Whether he does that for reasons looking in the future, I'm not sure. I think against Wolves, assuming, because there's nothing about Jonjo's fitness, so I'm not sure, but just assuming everyone was fit, I think he might give Willock a rest because he hasn't seen the other lads together where all the other combinations we've seen. Well, that'll do it for today, mate. It's been a lot of fun talking this through with you. We'll have a state of play, at least one of these a month, every single month. We'll be back in April. So lots more coming from True Faith and Patreon this week. Thanks for your time, mate Norman. Speak to everyone else very soon. Ta-da.